What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that never gets abandoned in the rain. We record inside, you see. Coming up, Wrexham's Hollywood ending, sorry, Blackburn's damp squib, contrasting moods in Sheffield, and Schumacher races clear, leaving Ryan low. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL? And it's another Monday meeting for the three of us to chat through all the big stories from the Football League weekend and look ahead to some upcoming games as well. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I am joined by Sam Park in your face all over the BBC Sport website. How are you doing, Sam?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Good. Oh,
it's a weather. Very brooding picture they use, by the way.
Yeah, I like it. There's a few rascals. In truth, I picked up an accreditation pass on Saturday morning, which is one from my Luton days. So I'm quite pleased that there's one of me in my civvies doing the rounds on the BBC Sport website rather than a picture from 2005 when I probably got various teeth missing and battle wounds and scars evident as I was midst playing career. So yeah, I was quite fond of that one.
If you've got a good photo, you just stick with it, don't you? There's no point changing it.
Do you know what? I'm frequently sending like broadcasters and stuff like that just a stock one that I took a few years ago with a white background. Yet I turn up at grounds and what have you, and then there's one from my playing days. So surely it's just been dismissed, the one I've emailed, and they just have a quick Google and stick one of me at Barrow away with Leighton Orient.
Adrian Clark, the other voice you can hear there, very much sticking to the formula for your massively successful YouTube channel, Clarky. It's that stock image of you looking quite statesmanlike, I'd suggest. Nice pearly whites on show. Looks like the hair's been cut fairly recently.
Don't think I've ever looked better, to be honest, Matt. And that's why I go with it. I mean, I did notice someone in the comments said, it doesn't look like you. Which is probably fair, but I just think if you got a good one, yeah, just work it.
You never knew if that was an insult or a compliment when you like turned up for a first date. You don't look like you did in your picture.
Oh, I think it's a negative.
Depends on the tone of voice, I would say, with that one. All right, we've got lots to get through. But first of all, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. And we are going to start today by looking at the Championship. So from the weekend, Middlesbrough maintain their position as pace setters. Friday's win against West Brom means it's their best start to a Championship season ever. Blackburn were one up on Ipswich at Ewood when rain stopped play with 10 minutes left. What is this, Wimbledon? Oxford got their first win of the season, seeing off Bristol City on Sunday. Birmingham left it late against Swansea in QPR, made it three wins on the spin whilst ending Stoke's previously perfect away record. But we are going to start at Carrow Road. Not a particularly happy nest for Canary in chief Liam Manning. Norwich were a goal up at the break, but 3 in 12 second half minutes for Wrexham simultaneously eased the pressure on Phil Parkinson while dumping a whole load more on Mr. Manning, who's lost all four at Carrow Road. Sam, great win for Wrexham though, and Issa Kabore with two pretty much identical assists, and Josh Windass up there with goal of the weekend.
Some brilliant individual performances from the players thrown in basically to that starting 11. I think we've championed the strength of the squad, and there's certainly been some poor performances from the players who currently had the shirt. So I think huge credit to Phil Parkinson on this occasion. Yeah, we know that Wrexham are not going to change completely the way that they play, the style that's got them great success. That's going to be a consistent. So what Phil Parkinson had the opportunity to do was to blood some new players, to change the personnel. So Dom Higham coming in for Connor Cody immediately improved them in that department. You spoke of Kabore on the right-hand side. That real pace, an outlet for them on the right-hand side, which I think they've definitely missed in the opening weeks of the season. There's been a shortage of pace in the side. Ben Sheaf, top quality operator, top Championship player in the middle of the pitch, and Windass with that sparkling of quality at the top end with, well, two brilliant goals, really. The second, obviously, was the pick of the match. So full credit to Phil Parkinson. Of course, you know, in a perfect world, they're not going to be conceding the amount of chances that they are and continue to do so. You know, the XG was higher for Norwich. The big chance is higher for the home side. But, you know, Wrexham are going to make opportunities. They're going to continue to make opportunities. Just need to tighten up a little bit defensively. But I see this as the turning point. I really do. We've got other players to come back in, other players that are going to be in contention, and it probably just needed a little bit of change, get some of these new guys in there, and I'm sure their fortunes are going to turn around. So a great result, but probably the perfect time to be going to face Norwich at Carrow Road.
Mentioned that there was some speculation about Phil Parkinson's future in the build-up to the game. Non-executive director Sean Harvey said, "Phil has everybody at the club's full support. I know before somebody starts writing headlines, Harvey gives Parkinson vote of confidence. That is not the vote of confidence." Not much confidence from the locals at Carrow Road in Liam Manning, though, Clarkey.
No, booze at half-time. Booze at full-time, for sure. Not great. They're not loving it. The natives at Carrow Road. There's a bit of negativity around the sort of style of play. Bit slow, very possession heavy, bit ponderous, and really a sort of lack of dynamism and creativity inside the final third. They've got these two number 10s in behind Josh Sargent, and none of them have really delivered yet. I was looking at it in terms of chances created. Four Norwich players have created five or more chances. None of them are attacking midfielders. Two of them are fullbacks, Stacey and Diallo. One's a centre mid right, and the other's Sargent. He's supposed to be getting on the end of chances. So it's a big reliance, I think, on Josh Sargent to make things happen inside the final third. Yeah, guys like Cernach and Marcondes and Jurasek, all of these guys, they've not really done it yet. Is it down to them, or is it down to a restricted sort of style of play where really I think they're not playing with freedom or personality? It's all a little bit too structured, I think, for Norwich fans liking. So let's see if Manning can get that going. He's probably just got to release the handbrake, give him a bit less information and let them play a bit and see what happens. Maybe they're not been brilliant back either, as this game shows. I was looking at the expected goals against, and they're second worst in the division. Only Wrexham have conceded more expected goals against. So players like Cordoba and Medic, not convincing. I think the goal is done well, Kovacevic, and I think Harry Darling's made a good impression. Centre mid doing all right, Topic, but yeah, a lot of the other new faces have been underwhelming. And yeah, he needs results quite quickly. Otherwise, you know, it could get a bit messy for Liam Manning, which would be a real shame.
Yeah, a team of individuals at the moment, Norwich, rather than a collective. Sorry, I did Phil Parkinson a bit of a disservice there, because they actually changed the system, played with two off Kiefer Moore. It was Kiefer Moore and Ryan Hardy in the previous defeat to QPR. So yeah, I think the biggest ingredient was the imprint of the new players, but having just reconstructured that front line with Norwich, something else to think about, probably took them by surprise and obviously worked really well for Wrexham.
Tough run coming up for Norwich. Go to Stoke, then West Brom at home, Ipswich away, before a reunion for Manning and Bristol City at Carrow Road on the 18th of October. That one stinks of narrative, not least because it's canaries and robins, and we know what a battle that can be in the world of ornithology. Will, still. No, I think we've wrung all the juice that we can out of that one for now, haven't we? Still not good for Will in his Southampton after they lost 3-1 against Hull City. Should probably start with the home side, though, and I wonder, Adrian, if maybe we've underestimated them a little bit. Second win, but doing better than we thought with 8 points here, and one for Sheffield United 2019-20 enthusiasts here, with John Lundstrom and Ollie McBurney both starring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good shout that. Yeah, but yeah, both scored, didn't they, in the game? I didn't see this result coming. Probably Hull City fans might not have done it either. Maybe you've done them a bit of a disservice. Yeah. I've kind of written them off as possible relegation strugglers, and maybe it'll be a little bit better than that. Ollie McBurney's definitely making a difference, though, isn't he? If you've got Ollie McBurney, you've got to use it, haven't you? You've got to drill those diagonals to him. And that's what he did. He pulled off centre halves. They were pinging ball after ball to him, and he was either knocking it down or controlling it, and they were linking from there. He was a menace in the game. Scored a really good header and got an assist as well.
For that second goal that he assisted for, that was a thing of beauty, wasn't it? As a team move.
Yeah, it really was, actually. Yeah, exactly. It was quite direct play, but it was really nice. It was nice to watch. Yeah, this was a really good performance. They've sort of bullied Southampton, definitely in the air, as McBurnie's success would indicate. They only had 29% of possession. They created the better chances, and they handled everything that the Saints threw at them. Two centre-halves were great. John Egan, very experienced. Charlie Hughes, less so, but two really good players. And Charlie Hughes, for me, that was a big one. He was really heavily linked with Coventry, wasn't he? And I thought it was kind of done. He was going. I think Coventry maybe thought it was done as well, but he ended up staying at Hull, and I think that could be a real difference maker for them, because when he plays, they definitely defend better. Him and Egan made 21 clearances between them, mainly because Southampton were just putting too many crosses in the box, and they were like, okay, all day long, we'll defend this. So yeah, it was good to see Bellumi back, the right winger. He's brilliant, wasn't he, at the start of last season, if you remember. Had some blinding games. Then he had a serious injury, and he played in this one. It was an ACL that he had, and he did all right, but then he had to come off, limped off just before half-time, which is a real shame. So that was the only sort of downer for Hull City on what was a really good day. And I mean, Sam's going to get into it, but a bit of an embarrassing result this for Southampton, and they're going to have to be a lot better than what they showed in this game. So as much as I praise Hull, I think Southampton were weak.
Yeah, and good to see Bellumi back, Algerian, born in Mascara and with an eye for a cross, etc. Sam, if you were an optimist, you'd say that the Saints' next two games offer them a chance to turn their season around. Liverpool away in the Cup, Middlesbrough at home. I'm not really an optimist.
No, I think as it stands, you probably think they lose both those games. You could maybe make a slight case for them getting a draw at home to Middlesbrough, but it's difficult to see them winning that game on current form. You know, I felt from this game, as Clarkie's outlined, first balls beaten too easily from balls into their box. The centre half's weak up against McBurnie. Every goal was just a ball flung in there. Good quality. Ryan Giles, you're going to get that from him. I think that's his third assist of the season already for that brilliant McBurnie header. And Hull look like they're going to be really good fun. They're scoring goals freely. So I think the credit goes to them. But at the moment, two stories kind of developing amongst others, but Norwich, their home form, of course, and early pressure on Liam Manning, and Will still not won since opening day against Wrexham, where, if you remember, they scored two goals in additional time. So that could have quite easily been a different outcome. So, yeah, defensively, centre-half pairing, not good enough. Yes, I think mitigating circumstances going forward that he hasn't kind of nailed down his favoured permutation, and he's added obviously Fellows and Azaz in the last knockings of the window. But that goodwill, if there is goodwill, there's another pun for you, is not going to last long. Maybe could have been different. Damien Downes went in 1v1, just missed the far post with his left foot. But yeah, this was a limp performance. Hull very much deserved the victory, and all of a sudden they're coming up against the current league leaders, best side in the division. Next up at St Mary's, where the atmosphere will be tense. They'll need to start that game well, because that could be a difficult afternoon for the new manager.
It's good for the league, though, isn't it? That Southampton and well, Leicester have been steady, but you know, the teams that come down are not Ipswich, haven't been good.
Sheffield United as well, you'd throw into that, you know, from the pre-season, you know, betting and aspirations for those clubs.
Not good for Will Steele, but it's good for the rest of us.
Top three of Borough, Stoke and Bristol City, not anybody had after six games, I don't think. Briefly on the two Sheffield teams, contrasting fortunes for them this weekend. United lost 1-0 at home to Charlton on Chris Wilder's latest return Wednesday, busting coupons across the land by winning at Pompey. And Adrian, they're only a point from safety.
What a morale boosting win. And, you know, with morale must be pretty low in that dressing room. So to go there and unexpectedly and to win will give them belief, won't it? But I still think they're going to go down. Unless something dramatic changes in the boardroom, I can't see them surviving. So yeah, it's a day to enjoy, but I still think these will be rare.
Yeah, I know. I agree with Clarkie. I think as well, Portsmouth complacency was always going to be the enemy in this game after the Southampton result and performance, certainly for the opening 45 minutes. And it's just presenting these young lads at Sheffield Wednesday was such an unbelievable opportunity, because some of them would be, you know, fringe players at best this season, probably out on loan even now. So to see, I think it was Ernie Weaver played centre-half and was majestic, and George Brown getting the second goal, who these are lads who probably wouldn't be in the first team. So really cool. Second, obviously profited from Shaughnessy going to ground with what I think is a torn hamstring, completely within his right to go on and stick it in the net. I think on that occasion, referee's not going to stop play for a muscle injury, but bad luck, bad news for Pompey. But yeah, huge credit to Sheffield Wednesday and these young players who are pulling up trees.
Yeah, what about Sheffield, Matt? One shot on target.
You're literally taking the words right out of my mouth here. I've managed just one goal in the league all season and just one shot on target on Saturday. So fairly obvious where they need to improve.
Yeah, it's bad, isn't it? It's really bad, because obviously you look at the names and you think, oh, they're definitely going to get it right. But
Clip me up from a couple of weeks ago when I said creativity was Sheffield United's problem. Clip it up, Matt.
Okay. Wasn't too sold on Nathan Jones' knee slide. I think he misjudged just how wet it was. Didn't really get the length that he was looking for, but a good win nonetheless.
Managers shouldn't be knee sliding. Sorry, Nate. It shouldn't be.
Yeah. No ex-player probably should be, I wouldn't have thought. In a twist to our usual format, we're going to preview some Championship games next. So coming up this weekend, in half an hour, down the M6, plus a bit of A38 for purists. That's all that separates the cities of Coventry and Birmingham. They meet on Saturday lunchtime. Cov haven't won since they put 7 past QPR. The goals have dried up, Sam. Saturday's stalemate at Leicester, their third straight draw.
Yeah, but I think a good point. Limited Leicester to very few opportunities, really, of good quality. So, yeah, they'll want to turn the draws into wins, but I don't think they should be deterred by that outcome. Mason Clark, obviously, is a miss for them. This is going to be an interesting game, because this is despite the shutout at the weekend, this is a team, obviously, that have started the season really creative mode, scoring goals, highest XG, highest goals in the division against a somewhat shot-shy Birmingham prior to this weekend, but a really good defensive unit. Conceded the fewest shots at Birmingham in the division. XG of 4.79. It's going to be fine margins, I think, this. I would favour the home side narrowly, but I think Birmingham could be a difficult nut to crack. They're still looking for, I suppose, their rhythm in the forward positions, which Clarkey and I have spoken about in the last few podcasts. Able to get the victory at the weekend, courtesy of a couple of substitutes combining, but I would fancy Coventry back on home turf, maybe just to edge this one.
All right, well, we shall see about that. They're still in the playoffs for now. What about Birmingham then, Adrian? Massive win for them at home to Swansea after three straight defeats in all comps. We mentioned, though, that they didn't really create anything at Stoke in their last away game, lost at Leicester too. Have you tempered your expectations of them for the season, or are you still thinking playoffs are a possibility?
I've tempered it a bit because of the lack of goal threat. It's not really clicked for them. I do think once it does click, or if it does click, then they're in a great spot, because they're well organised. They don't give much away. On those stats that Sam said, face the fewer shots, 15 fewer than the next closest team, which is just remarkable after so few games, 6 games. They've faced 25 less shots than Frank Lampard's Coventry, which is nuts, isn't it? So it does show you that they're a tough nut to crack. I think they'll make changes for this game. I think Chris Davis might shake it up a little bit, because the subs came on and looked good. Patrick Roberts played well when he came on, made a real difference. So I reckon he's going to start on the right. I would suggest that Damari Gray will switch to the left, where he looked a bit more comfortable. So that will give the fullbacks problems for Cov. And the fullbacks are really important, aren't they? So I think that's a big duel between the sort of Van Aiwijk and obviously Gray on one side, and Roberts and the left back for Cov on the other. So yeah, that'd be good to watch. Who's going to play out front? Duke came in and he looked okay. Didn't sort of tear up trees. Kyogi Furuhashi is struggling, isn't he? That one massive chance at the weekend, completely hashed it. And there's a little bit of frustration around him, but he does kind of make things happen. So, yeah, some decisions, I think, for Chris Davis to make ahead of this one. But, yeah, I think it'll be low scoring. I know Coventry have been flying in the attacking side, but I don't think many Birmingham games are going to be thrillers this season, unfortunately. I could see this being won, you know, by a single goal.
Okay, not taking either of your two's predictions seriously, I'm afraid, given what we're going to reveal later in the show. Elsewhere, Portsmouth hoping for some bounce-back ability after that disappointment at home to Chef Wed. They visit Portman Road on Saturday. So, Ipswich's game at Blackburn, abandoned with 10 minutes left. They were 1-0 down at the time. Kieran McKenna said, in the second half, the footing was too slippery to be safe. Then the ball stops moving. It was an inevitable decision that could maybe have been made earlier. In the end, there was no option. I don't know how the 4,000 Ipswich fans were feeling when the abandonment was made, Adrian, but what about players? How do you feel at that point? Do you think, well, we've got away with one here because we're probably going to lose this game? Or do you think we're going to have to come all this way again at some point later in the season?
It'd probably be a little element of that, but mainly they'll just be relieved that they kind of got away with it, because obviously down to 10 players as well. What happens with the red card? Does that still stand for Jacob Greaves? I have a feeling it does, even though the result doesn't. I mean, we don't know yet, actually, on that, do we? I mean, what do we think? What do we think should happen?
They'll have to replay the whole game, won't they?
I don't think you can give it to them, because, like, and McKenna's very clever there, because what he said in the quotes is it could or should have happened earlier. So what he's trying, we know what he's trying to say, is that, yeah, there was only 10 minutes left, but this could have been called off after, you know, an hour, 65 minutes or whatever. And if that was the case, they would definitely replay it. So I think it should be a replay, even though that's harsh on Rovers. But if the result is void, I actually think that Greaves' red card should be voided as well, personally. I don't know where you guys
stand. Well's goal will be taken off him, won't it?
Yeah.
That's not going to count. So then shouldn't it be the same for the red card?
I think so, yeah.
The game that never happened, it might be known as.
Yeah. But they're going to have to play better, won't they, Ipswich? I mean, the away form has not been good, has it? Been really sloppy, not defended brilliantly. Passing hasn't been as good. He's grappling, isn't he, for his best team? I know that they battered Sheffield United and maybe they'll batter Pompey, I don't know.
That Sheffield United game had the big caveat around it, though, didn't it? In that it was Ruben Selle's last dance. Yeah. And that is their only win this season in the league.
Yeah, it did have that caveat. And I'm just not sure about what the best configuration is. I think Philogene nailed on. Lock him in. He has to start. But I don't know about Akpom at number 10. I think he should be vying with Hurst for the nine shirt, maybe. And you can bring in maybe a Sammy Smodix, who's proven to be pretty prolific as a number 10 in the Championship. Yeah, Casey McAteer on the right with Jack Clark on the bench. I don't know. I don't know whether that's the right way to go about it from Ipswich. He certainly hasn't found his best team. And Kajust, the midfielder, really like him. Really liked him in the game against Sheffield United. I thought he looked excellent when everything's nice and, you know, they're winning the game and he can show himself. They need a bit more from him, I think, because he's probably on good money. He's a high-ish profile player. I don't think they're getting enough out of him, like in terms of goals, assists. He's supposed to be, I think, a box-to-box midfielder. Need more from players like him if they're going to consistently get results. But yeah, they got out of jail. And I actually fully expect them to get back on and deliver in front of their home fans. Now that they've finally got that home win, I suspect they might go back-to-back here.
As for Portsmouth, Sam, a bit of a theme of the podcast, struggling to get goals. None in their last two. Haven't scored more than one in a game all season. But they are unbeaten away. So some cause for optimism going into this one?
Yeah, as surprised as I am that they've faltered at Fratton Park, I think the type of player they got and the way they're set up just lead itself to be tough to beat away from home. I think they can counter mainly through Murphy, who obviously missed the weekend defeat against Sheffield Wednesday, so they'll be desperate for him back. Some of those balls he put in at St Mary's in the subsequent game were just incredible. He was so inviting for the strikers, the forward players, to go and attack. So it'll be vital that he's back, especially with the goalkeeper being out and now Shaughnessy looking to be sidelined for a long period. It could be Matthews, who came on, who's a young Australian boy who looked a really good player when I saw him last season, but obviously that Paul and Shaughnessy partnership's been really fruitful for them. Maybe Ogilvie could go and play in the centre, of which he did last season for a period. But yeah, I think they'll be won't be overawed because they've had a brilliant result at the Hawthorns, brilliant goal from Colby Bishop. They've had that goalless draw at St Mary's, another huge challenge going to Portman Road. But I think they are just set up to frustrate the better footballing sides in the division. Whether they'll have enough, I probably doubt, but I think it'll be a tight game again. And yeah, you're right, they need to improve their attacking impetus. I think with Murphy missing, didn't get a great deal from the wide players the other day. Sekicic looks to cut in field. He doesn't really hug the touchline. You need someone probably to be either on the other flank or in place of him, a little bit more dynamic to supply the opportunities that Colby Bishop will bury. Still got Lang to come back as well, which will be big for them, because he had a period last year where he was absolutely flying.
Okay, that's the Championship wrapped up. We're going to go to League One next. Blackpool scored a 98th minute winner at home to Barnsley. Wimbledon came from behind to claim a noteworthy W at Donny. Wickham off and running under Mike Duff. Port Vale needed a 95th minute penalty to see off 10-man Mansfield, with Reading, Stockport and Stevenage also victorious. We're going to talk about Lincoln teaming themselves up for their Carabao commitment with Chelsea on Tuesday by seeing off the increasingly hapless Hatters of Luton at Sintel Bank on Saturday. 3-1 the score here. Lincoln in third in the table, Sam. You'll be seeing them in that game that I mentioned coming up in midweek. Looking good for them so far. Scored twice in the last 5 minutes to win this one, but I think they'll feel they were worthy of the victory.
I think so. Yeah, had the better of the chances. Not lost since second game of the season at AFC Wimbledon. So this is a 10-game unbeaten stretch. And my first thoughts when I looked at the side from Michael Scubala, and I hope this was in keeping with the Lincoln supporters, are more au fait than me, but Rob Street and Ben House wide, James Collins, Freddie Draper down the middle. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think all four of these certainly started or have played a lot of football at centre forward. So very bold strategy, if you like, getting them all in the side, all big boys as well, all 6 foot, 6 foot plus. And it was Ben House who came up with the goods. The first goal, to contradict what I've just been saying, because you would think it would be a bit of an aerial bombardment. Lincoln have the smallest share of possession in the division. They've got a long throw. They can physically hurt you. First goal was beautiful in its manufacture. Draper with a lovely little slid ball, House with a nicely timed run, and a really accomplished finish as well. So they can play a little bit of football, but I think that physicality that they struggled with Luton. So this is a decent outfit here, and Chelsea will be tested, and they've got half a chance. It's slightly contrasting to previous seasons in that another note I've kind of frequently made this season is just the vast experience that Lincoln have got in their ranks with Sonny Bradley and James Collins. Obviously that contingent of former Luton players. It's a powerful side. Abikwa, another front player on loan from Coventry, comes on and scores a really good second goal to get their nose in front here. So yeah, it's a really solid start for Lincoln, and I wouldn't, you know, discount them after certainly one near miss across the last two seasons. I know they're that brilliant end to the previous campaign where they just missed out after a fantastic run. I think they're probably in a place now to fancy getting themselves into the playoffs at least.
Interesting game against Chelsea as well. First time they met them since 1911, believe it or not. I was tempted
Hang on a sec. I went to Lincoln Chelsea.
That would have been in the EFL Trophy.
Yeah, exactly, which was under 21.
Nice
whatever,
try. But furthest that an academy side has got in the EFL Trophy, I think that was, semi-finals.
Incredible game.
I want to say 2017. Keep coming at me with that, and I'll just keep talking about it all day. Let's move on, though, Clarkie, to Luton. And my initial thought on this game was to ask you what's going wrong with Luton this season. But then you kind of look at the fixtures and the games they've lost. Three of them were against three of the current top four. The other one's at home to Plymouth, where they concede two penalties. So maybe if you look at it at surface level, you think, oh, they're not adapting very well. But have they just lost to teams who are flying at the moment? Can that be a bit of mitigation?
It's Luton. They were in the Premier League 2 years ago. No, this is a bit embarrassing. It's getting to crisis point, I think, in terms of the way that they're defending. You know, they didn't defend very well today in the Championship. Leaked too many goals, and you think, well, surely they'll improve this season. The manager get into them, has a full pre-season,
Started with back-to-back clean sheets.
Gets them organised. Yeah, it's. I don't know. I'm not impressed. I'm massively underwhelmed by Luton. So it's a really poor result. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see anyone get sacked, of course, but I think pressure must be starting to build. Must be.
I mean, that opening day of the season against AFC Wimbledon, you could argue that Wimbledon were, well, very good value for a point. So, I mean, I'd have to have a proper look through the results and performances. I don't feel that they've probably put together a 90-minute performance yet this season. So I think there's been a lot to sort out there across a number of years, and hence why Rob Edwards obviously left and they made the change. But they're going to have to see the fruits of Matty Bloomfield's labour on the training ground in the next few weeks to give everyone a little bit of confidence. So they need a result off the back of obviously two defeats against Argyle and Lincoln now.
Yeah, tough run coming up as well. They've got Doncaster, Stevenage and Huddersfield all in the near future. Elsewhere in League One, Bradford flying, which is something that Bantams often struggle with, albeit they are superior in that regard to your run-of-the-mill chicken. Better than Bluebirds too, based on Saturday's evidence. That's a tangential run-up at Cardiff 1, Bradford 3, isn't it? You want to start with Cardiff then, Clarkey, the home side? It's the first time that they've lost in the league and as you know well, Bradford are a tough opponent. So is this one we shouldn't read too much into, or were they well below par on the day? What happened?
Well, they came into it on the back of their first defeat this season. So it's been a little bit of a sort of an awakening, hasn't it? No, it wasn't a first defeat. Obviously, this was the first defeat, but they scrambled a point the week before, which was the closest they'd come to getting beat. So maybe it was coming. I just feel that you shouldn't read too much into it from a Cardiff point of view. They're still a good team. They just kind of got, how I would describe it, old man. And I'm not saying that Bradford are a team of granddads. Of course I'm not. They're not. But Bradford are much more experienced, and it kind of showed in this match where the Cardiff looked young. They looked a little bit naive. I mean, there's some shocking defending. I mean, Gabriel Osho came in for his debut. The penalty he gave away was, look, if I was playing centre half and I gave that away at my age, I'd be disappointed with myself because the positioning's awful. So Sarcevic runs off him, spins into the hole. He's desperate to get back, and then to slide in like he did was just nuts. Really, it's always going to be a pain. And it was one of those where, yeah, Bradford showed their sort of experience and quality on the day. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a rude awakening, but I wouldn't start panicking if I was Cardiff. I still think there's loads of positives. But, yeah, on Bradford, I mean, I don't know whether Sam wants to speak about them, but, yeah, like Will Swan, great again. That assist for Nurfield was class, showing that he's a really good all-round striker. Tommy Lee, left out of the team last weekend, comes back in, smashes one into the top corner. So yeah, look, loads of positives for Bradford. None of us would have had Bradford down as the early season leaders, would we? It's quite some start for them.
No, we wouldn't, but I don't want to go overboard, but I'm feeling quite optimistic about their chances. I just think, you know, look at the bench. We obviously know how well Graham Alexander's done to be versatile and adaptable in the absence of Cook. You've got him to come back in. You've got Stephen Humphreys. They've signed McIntyre on loan as well, the centre half. This is a good looking squad all of a sudden. We've spoken often about how he's turned the fortunes around at Valley Parade. So I felt this was, I fancied them to get something at Cardiff. I did, because of the style of play, for all those things that you've laid down, Clarkey. I didn't expect them to win in a canter, but I think it's difficult not to be excited about them. I think there's an intensity. There's obviously a continuity in the way that Graham Alexander sets them up now as well. Max Power, I think, had created the most chances in the division prior to the weekend as well, which grew gasps from me when I saw that on one site, because I don't think of him as the most creative of sources. But yeah, everything going really well for them. And you'd have them, similarly to Lincoln, probably positioned with an opportunity of getting themselves in the playoffs, I think.
Don't want the ball, like Lincoln. They don't want it. When there's space to run into, they can be dynamite. Yeah, it's... I've seen a bit of Bradford this season. I have enjoyed them.
And like Lincoln, I hope they stick around. I give them a chance of causing an upset in the Carabao in midweek. They're going to St James's Park to play Newcastle on Wednesday. Can you imagine how rotated that Newcastle team is going to be? They've already won away from home in both previous rounds against Championship opposition. Mm. So maybe there's a little chance of a cup set there.
The holders, yeah, they wouldn't want to give it up.
Won't want to give it up, but yeah, you never know. We wanted to do a quick line on Steve Schumacher smashing his mate Ryan Lowe. Got to be a sore one for him as the apprentice gets the better of the master. Bolton winning convincingly in that one, and feels more and more as we get closer or further into Steve Schumacher's reign that he's kind of getting a handle on things at Bolton, right? Just one defeat for them all season. That was back on opening day for Wigan. We'd praised them, didn't we, last week after they beat Doncaster, but inconsistent to this point. Either of you, comment on either of those two things if you'd like.
Yeah, I think Ozzy's remit, having watched Wigan a bit under Sean Maloney, was, as we've touched on, to make them a better attacking side. And I think he's done that in the previous games to this one. I would not have seen them shipping four goals in the fashion that they did. I think the mitigating circumstances is that there's some unbelievable finishing in there. If people haven't seen the goals, flashing past who I think is one of the best goalkeepers outside the top level. I can't believe Tickle's still at Wigan, as impressed as I was of him last season. So some unbelievable finishing. We know that Stephen Schumacher likes to go full blast and try and plunder many a goal, and that's what happened here. So out of sight, really, very early in this game. Quality finishes, low knees. That's the one big question mark, I suppose, for Bolton. The bigger picture, Cozy Adubri, Force, Mason Burstow, all hitting fine form early part of the season. If they continue in this vein, will he have them around for the entirety of the season, or will he have to go shopping again in January?
Yeah, I'm going to call it now. I think Bolton are going to get into the top three. Top two, I'm not quite sure, but they're going to be very close, I think. And the reason is that I think results should have been better until now. I think, yeah, the numbers will tell you that they are not giving anything away. How many shots do you think they're facing per game this season, Bolton? About nine games. Just have a guess. How many shots
on average? And off target?
No, just shots faced. Shots faced.
10.
A total?
No, so 10 a game, yeah? A
game. 8.
That would both be really good, wouldn't it? 6.
Impressive.
That's outstanding. Mm. 55 shots they've faced, right? The next closest is actually Luton. It was 21 more, I think. So, yeah, they're keeping things really tight. And obviously, if they can attack like they did against Wigan, they'll be absolutely fine. So, yeah, I don't think there's much wrong with Bolton.
All right, keep an eye on Bolton then. The League One game we're going to look ahead to. See Stevenage go to Brisbane to face the Orient. Confused? Of course not. You're an EFL aficionado. Orient's defeat at Reading on Saturday means they've only won one of their last five, losing three of those. Clark, if I can dip into my big book of football cliches, I'm going to use the phrase playoff hangover, potentially, lazily.
I'd say it. Yeah, that's a fair comment. Definitely at home. I mean, only one home win from five games. That's really, really disappointing, isn't it? I think that's five in all comps. But yeah, it's not gone right for Richie Wellens yet. And it's probably because they lost a lot of good players. That was always going to be an issue. And it's a kind of a revamped team, isn't it? He's had to get a lot of new players into key positions in the team. And I think they're just working it out at the moment. Just talked about Bolton being solid. Well, the O's aren't really, that in terms of shots on target faced, only Plymouth have faced more. So you'd say that the structure of the team's not been as good. They're the best pressing team I've seen in League One. They're really good at it. Like, they will suffocate you, Leyton Orient. But if you can play through them, results will tell you that you know, they're maybe not as secure as they were last year. So, yeah, they've had a lot of the ball, loads of it, actually. And I just wonder whether they want a bit less. Because if you're the best pressing team, do you want to be possession heavy? Do you want 70% of the ball, which was what they had at Reading at the weekend? You probably don't, do you? You want it to be more like 50-50 so that the other team can have it, so you can steal it in really good areas. So, unfortunately, in this game against Stevenage, they will have 60, 65, I don't know, maybe 70% of the ball again. So it's not a fixture that maybe they'll relish. That's 695 passes against Reading. It's a lot, isn't it? And they got beat. So, Yeah, we'll see. I was looking at the history of this fixture. Last four meetings, 3 goals in total. So, maybe not a thriller at Brisbane Road. But they could do with a home win. But if they get one, my fancy is that it'll be a narrow one.
Yeah, Stevenage second, 1-6-8, just one defeat in the league so far. Another team, maybe, Sam, who we underestimated, and a boss as well. Alex Revel talking to the BBC about the fact that he's been chatting with bomb disposal experts and Red Arrow's crew members to try and get a little insight into how he can help his team. Unorthodox, but seems to be working for him.
Excellent news, yeah. Excellent news. Whatever floats your boat.
Your Red Arrow.
I'm sure Steve Evans and the chap who managed them for years, Clarky, helped me out. He was a bit...
Paul Fairclough?
No. He went to Preston. What was his name? Graham Wesley. I'm sure they've pulled out a few random days out for team bonding and what have you. I think he was very much out of that vibe. It's an unbelievable start. 6 wins in 8. I think there'll be no surprise, as Clarkey says, that they don't want the ball really, Stephen. I think they're 19th for possession against Orient, who are third. No surprise there. They're not going to make an abundance of opportunities, but I think probably the major difference from obviously them being a robust side who will be very good with set pieces, they got real match winners in the team. They got individuals who can change the outcome of a match in a moment. The likes of Patterson, who's been... Well, he tore Wimbledon to shreds in the Football League Trophy. That was his first assist for Jordan Roberts' winner at the weekend. You've got Kemp, who in League Two is a lovely footballer, capable of the brilliant. Jamie Reid, former teammate of mine, had a really good time at Stevenage since he's gone there. Labala was the other support player off the right the other day. So, you know, that's a 4 to keep any back line on their toes. And I think if you get it structurally right behind that, which they are at the moment, in keeping with what they've been previously, they're going to cause a lot of teams problems. So difficult one to call here. I think Alex Revel, former Orient player, he'll be looking forward to it. You know, I think they're good for a draw at least here. I've been so impressed with their start to the season, and as Sklarky spoke about, you know, Orient very much a work in progress with Richie Wellens trying to get that chemistry right with a new team.
All right, tough one to call there then. That's League One. We're going to go to League Two next. Gillingham still unbeaten, top under Gareth Ainsworth. They are yet to lose a game, that after they took advantage of Newport's ineptitude. Salford won the 5-goal top of the table clash against Swindon. Oldham made it 3 wins in a row, 2-0 at Cheltenham, who sacked Mike Flynn as a result. Barrow, Barnet, Harrogate, Notts and Walsall also victorious. Hands up though, who saw Accrington winning at MK Dons coming? No smash and grab though, by the looks of it, from what I saw, Clarkie. Accrington worth their win, and slightly troubling times maybe for Paul Warne, smashed by West Ham's under-21s in the week and then losing here too.
Look, make no bones about it, this result and performance is an embarrassment to MK Dons, isn't it? I mean, given the investment, look, given the quality of players they've got, this should be a nailed-on home win. Yet they were outplayed, they were outfought. Yeah, no wonder Warne kept them in the dressing room afterwards. I think there was quite a big meeting after the game where the players were allowed to say their thing and get things off their chest. But you looked at the goals, shocking. I mean, Liam Kelly, we've praised a lot on this podcast in the past. Sinclair runs off him to score. He gets hooked at half-time, Kelly. Second goal wasn't much better, where the main at the far post switches off. So, yeah, but you look at the shot count, the quality of the chances, the energy of the performances, and it was all about Accrington standing. They were miles better. So, yeah, special word for the left wing back on loan from Everton, Isaac Heath. Superb, good assist. Didn't give the ball away in the entire game, which I think at League Two level is very, very impressive, because there's a lot of 50-50 balls. There's a lot of, you know, a lot more longer passes, and yeah, 100% pass accuracy for him. So yeah, and he ran with the ball lovely as well, and did a job on Russian Hepburn Murphy, who's a really good player at that level. So yeah, loads of positives for Aki, for MK. This has to be the low. This has to be the moment that their season turns around. Because if it isn't, then Warney's in trouble, given the budget they've got.
It's funny, how much is it probably down to some of those players that just don't fit Paul Warne's kind of ideal system set up? does he need January to just move a few more on and bring a few more in that are going to be able to play the way that he wants? Because there's a few that just look like fish out of water at the moment. I just wanted to say the Alex Gilby goal as well is the clearest foul you're ever going to see. I think it's Sanders. He wasn't playing, was it? It's Orford who pushed the Accrington player into his own goalkeeper, and it just fell beautifully for Gilby to score into the empty net. So it probably should have been more convincing, really, because the MK Dons goal shouldn't have stood. Completely agree. Accrington, the better side. Poor defensively, as MK Dons were, beautifully constructed Accrington goals, beautiful passing football. Huge credit again, the two goal scorers I wanted to mention. Caton, they got from Chester last January, brilliant goal scoring record in the non league. Isaac Sinclair, son of Trev.
Trevor.
Which okay. I wasn't aware of until I Wikipedia'd this morning. 2-2 for him from Curzon Ashton. So it's unbelievable, you know, in comparison. Let's look at who they were playing at the weekend. You know, players that have played in the Premier League, in the case of Patterson and Mendes Lang, I'm sure probably turned out in the top division, against players that Atkins and Stanley, with respect, have plucked from relative obscurity, polish up, and somehow they remain competitive. So for so many years, it was John Coleman. Now it's John Doolan. Yeah, and they continue to punch above their weight, which is incredible, and they deserve a mention for that.
Yeah, won all season in the league before last weekend against Colchester. Now they got their first back-to-back victories since January. And the game we're going to look ahead to in League Two, Crewe versus Notts County. I thought Martin Patterson might have been P45 by now. It shows what I know. Is Notts going to Gresty Road in the playoff places after winning three of their last four in League Two? And they smashed Crawley at the weekend, Adrian, too. So this funky system they've got of how they pick the team and how they sign players is working for the moment, at least.
Well, we said it had worked, didn't we? we said Martin Patterson was a great gaffer and that this selection by committee was a genius idea, didn't we? I think. I don't know. We'll have to check the tapes. But no, they're in good form, aren't they? Won three of their last four, lost one of their last six. They've scored in all but one game this season, into the playoff spots. Doing it at the moment without Matt Dennis, who was August Player of the Month, six goals. I think he must be injured at the moment. He's not available. So, yeah, they've gone back to it. Obviously, Alassane Jatta is leading the line and did well at the weekend. This game was interesting because the subs delivered, didn't they? It was Tyrese Hall got two off the bench, and Jaden Luca got three assists off the bench, which is very, very unusual. They sort of picked off Crawley on the break in this game. Notts County have the best conversion rate in League Two, so they're taking their chances big time. So it might be a little bit flattering, some of the, you know, the goal scored tally, or maybe some of these results, but kudos to them. And yeah, they'll go to Crewe, kind of looking forward to the game now, aren't they? You know, it'd be interesting to see if Patterson starts those two guys that came off the bench, two youngsters who came on and delivered for him. So yeah, it should be a good game, this.
What's happened to Crewe then, Sam? No wins in five in the league for them. They started with four straight wins, so it's quite the tail off.
Bowles, I think you look at their last victory was a 4-1 win at Fleetwood, or certainly the last resounding victory. They've scored two in the subsequent five games, and a number of players, Josh March, if memory serves, had a really productive start to the season. I think there's a little bit of kind of repetitiveness going on in that they seem to struggle against the really robust physical sides, hence why we all felt that, well, not hence, but we felt they may win some, where they may win at Barrow at the weekend, and they get turned over in a game where they did create quite a few chances. But I think that's happened previously this season. They lost against Gillingham by a goal to nil as well. I think this game probably suits Crewe a little bit more than those type of fixtures. It'll be a better football match against Notts County, who I think for Martin Patterson has probably had quite a lot of help not having to make too many changes in terms of his Notts County team looks quite similar to the one that was taken to the field last season, certainly with Jatta and obviously Dennis when he's back fit and a number of the players who had really productive campaigns. I think that's probably helped his cause, but I think he'll be tested this weekend. If you remember, Crewe played pretty well in that defeat against Barnet. They'll probably be still be scratching their heads how they didn't get anything from that. But subdued at Barrow, subdued against the more physical teams, I think in a more footballing match where there'll be a bit of more space probably for them to try and execute some free-flowing attacking moves, they may have more joy. So I could see goals in this one, and maybe Crewe, despite the recent results, not being too much wrong there.
Okay, can see goals in that one. That's a prediction of sorts. I'm going to use that to segue into our predictions. We will breeze straight past what happened last week. I think it might be the first time that not a single point was handed out to any of us, which is really, really not good enough, I would say. Adrian,
worse than MK Dons we were, Matt, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. I mean, at least it means you've maintained your healthy lead. And because you are the leader, I'm going to let you go first this week. West Brom, Leicester, what's going to happen?
Oh, I didn't want to go first in this one. I think this is a tricky game to call. I'm going to back the Foxes. I think that it was a good 0-0 against Cardiff in a way. I think there's a lot to like about Leicester. I think with Winks back in the team, they're going to be okay. And I think they're going to win this game. They're going to win it 2-0 at the Hawthorns.
Well, okay. 1-1 for me. Sam, what about you?
Yeah, I'd have had the 1-1 probably. That's put me in a difficult position. I don't really like the 2-2. I'm going to have to go 0-1 Leicester. I'd probably side with Clarkie just.
Okay. Well, let you have first dibs then at our next game, which is Mansfield versus Rotherham.
Sure. I have no idea where to go here. So I am going to go for Mansfield to have a little bit more home advantage. Nigel Clough, fun and frolics, 3-1 Stags.
That's what I was thinking. Adrian, what about you?
1-0 Mansfield, two teams not in good form. Mansfield in pretty bad form. Rotherham away from home, pretty disastrous. Stags to nick a bad game, 1-0.
I'm going to pick a 2-0 home win. In that one, Tranmere Cambridge to finish off. Why did I leave my first pick for this game? I've no idea because I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen in it. I tell you what, I'm going to go for a Desmond 2-2 here for me. Adrian, what do you reckon?
Cambridge are picking up. Tranmere are leaking goals, so I'm going to go for an away win again here. Tranmere 1, Cambridge 2.
Nice, like that. Sam.
I'm not sure I fancy Cambridge to win on the road. I think they're a different proposition at home. Have I had a 1-1? I'll take it.
No.
I'll take it.
Okay. 1-1 for Sam there. Right, we'll do Tweet of the Week in a sec. Let me remind you one more time, though, of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses, at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+ for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Right, Tweet of the Week to finish then comes from Harrogate Town's Jack Evans. He, as is the style, is quoting the club official account tweet, which said, back to winning ways in at Sky Bet League 2, muscly arm emoji after their 2-0 win at home to Shrewsbury. Our boy Jack says, massive shift from the boys today for a big 3 points. We kick on from here. Praise emoji, yellow heart emoji at Harrogate Town. Fairly run-of-the-mill, Sam, but I felt like it had been a while since we'd had a wee kick on from here, or words to that effect, after a team wins their first game in a while. Are you a fan of kicking on and Jack's pros in general?
Yeah, it's slightly different terminology here. Pretty bog standard. I thought you were going to go straight to the one and only reply.
Yeah.
From Tim Evans. Yeah. Well done, young man. Good wheels, good win, good graft. Good wheels, is that his boots? Are we taking that as...
I just thought it meant like maybe engine that he got round the pitch a lot, but
no, wheels, I think, would be referring to his boots. Do you not think, Clarkie?
I would always call shoes wheels. Yeah, new pair of wheels. So, but, wow. But it seems a strange thing to comment on, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for Tim is that the header picture in his bio is win, lose or draw, United till I die, with a picture of Old Trafford. So you really support Tim. You can't have two teams. Clarkie, does he lose any points for tagging in the official Harrogate account? I mean, he's quote tweeting them anyway, so do they need to be tagged in again?
It's unnecessary. It's unnecessary. But yeah, it's a bit footballer cliche, isn't it? Massive shift. It's very bog standard. I'm disappointed in you, Matt, to be honest, because Walsall put out the undoubted tweet of the week, didn't they? This is Albert's world, and we're just living in it with the John Travolta staying alive emoji, and then the video of him with a walking stick chucking in a few little dance moves. I thought that's surely tweet of the week, Matt.
It's a great video. It goes against the spirit of tweet of the week, though, because it's a video of something somebody did rather than some very, very mundane words that they've put on Twitter. I tell you what, Jack, all he basically does is retweet the Harrogate account when they mentioned him. So well done for putting your head above the parapet and putting in your own views on there. He's a Man United fan as well. He has retweeted something about Johnny Evans being an incredible servant to the club. And a Scott McTominay goal for Napoli. We could be here all day going all the way through a League Two footballer's tweets, but we've all got better things to do with our time than that. So instead, we shall simply wrap the show up here with my thanks to Adrian, to Sam, and to you for listening. Back with another one next week. For now, though, it's goodbye.